Hi everyone, this is your host Harmit, and you're listening to Tobin Talks. Hi everyone, thank you so much for tuning into Tobin Talks today. I'm your host Harmit, and today is the last episode of Tobin Talks for the 2022-2023 publishing year. Thank you guys so much for making this a blast, and I thank everyone who's reached out and shown support. Your support means everything to me, and I'm really honored to have been your host this year. So, let's end today off with a bang! U of M's Extended Education will be running a media literacy program that aims to help people identify fake news and evaluate the credibility of content in media using investigative journalism techniques. This program is designed for a diverse audience, whether that's journalists, educators, activists, consumers, and more. We'll be speaking with Cecile Rosner, who's the developer and instructor, and is also a journalist of 40-plus years, a prior managing editor for CBC Manitoba, and an executive producer of The Fifth Estate. After that, we'll be speaking with Rod Lastra, Acting Dean of Extended Education. Stay tuned for more! First up, we have news reporter Alicia speaking with Cecile Rosner.
About the media literacy program, can you tell me a bit about what the program is and why it's so important?
You know, I've had a long career in journalism. I was with the CBC for more than 30 years. I was in print journalism before that. So over the years, I've also done a lot of training in journalism, of journalists mostly. When I was inside the CBC, I did a lot of training of journalists in techniques of investigative journalism and other things, like search techniques, how to find information. But I think a key thing for a lot of journalists in trying to do their job better is developing their critical thinking skills. In other words, how do you think through messages that are coming your way? How do you think through problems? Because journalists, you know, are inundated with messages. As you probably know, there's millions of press releases that come into the newsroom of any news organization every day. Press conferences are called. There are lots of organizations out there trying to convince journalists to do a story about them, do a story in a particular way, and so forth. So it's important for journalists to be able to figure out how do I figure out what's true, what's not true, and so forth. Sometimes even journalists can get misled on this front. So now think about it from the point of view of, I used to do training for journalists on that front, but now think of it from the point of view of the reader, of the consumer of the news, right? You have to, which is everybody, really. Everybody depends on media for understanding what's going on in the world. So you have to be able to properly read the messages that come at you, whether it's in media stories or on social media, stuff that your friends are sharing with you through their various social media accounts, things you encounter online, especially these days where most messages are coming to you from, but also on television and radio and all the other forms of communication. So to me, that's why it's important. Everybody is trying to, all kinds of organizations and individuals and politicians and corporations are pushing messages at all of us all the time. And it's really important that we know how to properly assess those messages, figure out what's true in those messages, figure out what's misinformation in those messages, figure out what's disinformation, how to assess what we're reading. And part of that is just developing those skills, critical thinking skills, media literacy skills. And also, because I've done this for quite a long time, there's a whole bunch of very specific tools and techniques that journalists can use, investigative journalists use, that ordinary people can also use to sort of supplement the way they think about stories and help them a bit find out information on their own.
And so can you tell me like a bit about like who is this program like really aimed at and like the demographic for that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very broad. You know, I do another course about investigative journalism specifically, and mostly that's aimed at students who want to go into journalism or some related fields. For this course, though, I think it's got, in my mind, it's got a very broad potential audience that I think a lot of different types of people could benefit from, whether you're a student or a teacher. Like if you're a teacher at any level, whether it's high school or university or elementary even, you have to help your students with their media literacy skills, with their critical thinking skills. But I think there's also an audience out there of activists, like people who want to change things, change the world in some particular way. They need to be equipped with techniques for how to find out pertinent information. Even if you're an ordinary consumer, which we all are, and doing ordinary things like, okay, you want to get something fixed in your house. Who should you hire? How do you find out? How do you do due diligence? But a big part of what we do in investigative journalism is we do backgrounding of people and of companies. And it's that kind of due diligence that, you know, like in my experience, a lot of people don't do enough of when they're buying a house or trying to hire somebody to come do work on their house or doing all the ordinary things that we as consumers do, even buying a product. How do you research the product, right? So there's skills in this course that teach you some of those types of things. So I think, the kind of universe of people that would be interested in these skills is quite large, in my opinion.
And what do you think kind of is like the biggest challenge facing like media literacy in education like today?
One of them, I think you've got to, I think, you know, one of the biggest differences in the last decade is the huge growth in social media. I mean, like when you talk about things like disinformation, for instance, or false messages floating around, they've been around forever. But with social media, they can now travel way, way faster. You know, someone puts out a false message, and then there's mischief that can happen on that front too. And we've seen many, many different types of cases like this, whether it's by countries or political parties or different types of organizations where you hire people to push your message. There's a whole industry now called influencers, right? So in the olden days, if you wanted to do a public relations campaign, you might put up a billboard, you might buy an ad in a newspaper, you might buy an ad on a radio station. Well, part of your ad buy now is you hire influencers. What does that mean? Well, you hire, in some cases, even ordinary people to promote your product. And then it gets murky. Like you see someone you trust on Instagram or TikTok or whatever social media platform you're on, suddenly speaking about a product or speaking about an event or speaking about an organization, you might think, you might be persuaded to buy that product or support that organization. And you may never know, you might not suspect that that might actually be bought and paid for as part of some influencer campaign. That's why I think, you know, a good mindset to have is to challenge things, to always try to challenge things, to always, when you're reading something, anything, to think to yourself, well, in whose interests is this message? Could someone have paid for this message? Could someone have influenced this message? Whose interests are being served by this message? And then I think it helps you try to get a better understanding of, like, what's real, what's authentic, and what's not. So, when you ask what's the biggest challenge? To me, that's one of the big changes that has happened recently. It's just the power and the speed of potential distortion of messages through social media that's really accelerated in the last few years.
Like, how did you personally become, like, interested in, like, media literacy and, like, just, like, clarity of, like, what people are, like, reading and consuming on the internet?
I mean, as I mentioned, like, I've been involved in the news business all my professional working life. And, you know, for about 15 years, I was the managing editor of CBC Manitoba. So I was the person ultimately responsible for all the stories we chose to report and did report on television, radio, and online. at CBC Manitoba. That's a pretty big responsibility. So the question is, well, what should we be reporting? Because it's up to every newsroom to decide what to cover, what not to cover, how to cover it. So, you know, what got me interested in this? I felt I had to get interested in this. I didn't want to be manipulated by outside forces, and I wanted to train everyone I worked with, all the reporters and editors and everyone that went out on a daily basis, on how best to evaluate all the messaging that was coming at them, how to spot whether something was a lie or was the truth. And sometimes that's not easy to do on a one-day turnaround story or a quick, deadlines are a big part of journalism, and there's only so much research you can do within whatever given deadline you have. So that's why I felt it was important to develop different kinds of techniques to assist reporters, assist journalists to do their jobs better, to try not to get duped, try not to get misled, and to try to serve the audience as best they could by understanding which messages are real and which ones are not.
How do you think, like, schools and universities, like, what role do you think they have in, like, promoting, like, media literacy in terms of, like, academics and stuff?
I think it's really important. I think schools and universities have a big role to play in this. That's why I'm excited about this particular course, mm-hmm. because it focuses on it very specifically. That's not to say that other courses don't talk about it and deal with it. Like, I think a lot of, I'm sure a lot of university courses stress literacy in different ways and critical thinking in different ways. But I think what's unique, I think, about this one is it's stressing it with respect to the media that we read and consume. Like any good academic discipline will try to teach students how to evaluate materials. And that is certainly part of it. That's part of what I'm trying to do here too. But I think what's great about this course is it's isolating it as a thing in itself. And not only is it talking about how to identify and how to use critical thinking, but, you know, the last part of it is really important is, like, here's some tools. Here's some actual techniques. Like, if you read something in the media and you're confused, you think maybe someone's trying to push a message on me. I'm not sure what's true or it isn't true here. Well, the next step is, well, here's some techniques for you to find out what the actual truth about certain things is. So I think that's one of the things that makes this unique. But in answer to your question, I think this is an important thing that high schools have to teach and colleges and universities have to, because if we turn out a next generation of people that are not media literate, then I think we're in trouble on a lot of fronts.
And so, like, you talked a bit earlier about, like, the impact of, like, things like TikTok and Instagram, and, like how that's risen in recent years. So, like, in what other ways do you think that, like, how social media has impacted, like, media literacy and the spread of misinformation?
You know, what's interesting, like, sometimes I'll ask a class that I have, what kind of media do you consume? Like, I might have a class of 25 people and say, how many people read the newspaper regularly? And, like, maybe one person will raise their hands. Mm-hmm. Like, newspaper readership, as you know, I mean, it's sad to think because you work for the Manitoban, mm-hmm. but it's declined. And I don't know if most people read the Manitoban online now or not, but a lot of young people especially will say they don't consume much news, but I actually think they're wrong. They are consuming news, whether they think they are or not. Like, so some students might think I'm not consuming news because I never type in the winnipegfreepress.com or cbc.ca, and they might not. However, they're on their platforms. Their friends are sharing content with them. They're on YouTube. That content has been produced by someone somewhere. And, you know, if anything you think you know about the U.S. president, what's going on in China, what's going on in Ottawa, indigenous protests in BC. It's all coming from media at some point. And so to me, these platforms are the way a lot of people are now getting served up media stories. Except, you know, I think one of the features of the way we read it when we're scrolling through stuff on our phones is a lot of people are consuming it in a very superficial way. So they might see a headline and then just keep going, right? Or they might click on it and read the lead sentence and then click out of it and keep going. And to me, that's a nature of modern life. And it's all the more important that we train people to understand what it is that they're reading and how sometimes a headline is actually not representative of the rest of the article. Or a lead story might present a conclusion that the facts of the story don't actually support. So I find that to be a potentially dangerous situation that the technology of like smartphones and social media has kind of magnified.
As you've seen with like people, like you just said, like they just read the headlines or like they're so like on Instagram and all that kind of stuff. How do you see like the field of media literacy evolving in like the future?
Well, I hope these things are taken seriously and studied in a serious way, actually. And not just allowed to wash over us. Like, a lot of us are prisoners to algorithms these days. You know, like, the big giant corporations of our day, whether they be Facebook or Google or YouTube or, you know, what have you, they're the ones deciding what a lot of people read and consume. We all know that our habits are being captured and artificial intelligence is analyzing them, and then we're served up more content along those same lines. You know, when you watch a Netflix show, at the end of it, it says, hey, you might like this, that, and the other. And so all these programs are analyzing us all the time and serving up content for us. And if we consume that content, it's forming part of our consciousness. Well, right now, that's being done by all these big for-profit companies for their own gain. We need to understand how that works. We need to be studying that ourselves. And if it's distorting what some people are reading or what we are ourselves are thinking, if when I go onto the internet, I just get ads and I'm just being served up stuff of things that some big companies think I want to read, and they privilege that over other content in my different searches, I'm not being that well served. I think because of these factors, it's important that we're, first of all, the big thing is to be aware of them and think critically about them, and then study the field to figure out what it is, you know, sort of we as citizens can do about that phenomenon.
What are like some of the techniques and methods that like you're going to be discussing in like the program?
You know, when it gets to the specific techniques, there's going to be a whole component of like public records. And what I mean by that is these are records that are available to anyone. Mostly they're held by government. But we as the public have a right to see them. And that ranges from everything from, you know, a land title record, or, you know, a property tax record, or I'll be showing people how you find out whether someone owns a house or a car or a boat, where to go looking for information like that. The best resources online for this type of thing are searchable databases. Searchable databases are the real golden nuggets of information online. A lot of them are available. There's a lot of good open data sources now online, but a lot of people just simply don't know about them. So, for instance, you know, I'll be going through exercises of here's how you background a person. Here's how you find out as much as possible about any given person. What do they own? What are their connections? And so on and so forth. And then there's different categories of people. Here's how to find out about politicians. Here's how to go looking for what political contributions they've received. Here's how to find what expenses they've expensed. Here's how to find who the lobbyists in Canada are, who the lobbyists are lobbying for. Here's how to look for connections.
Tell me like a little bit about like the media literacy program and like why extended education like started to start it.
Absolutely, yeah. So the media literacy, critical thinking, and investigative journalism program that we've developed, it's really a program focused towards civic education. It's open to everyone. Cecil Rossner is the content provider. He's the one that brought the program forward, the program idea forward. He's an award-winning journalist with over 30 years of experience with the CBC, the Fifth Estate, and is currently vice president of the Canadian Association of Journalists. The program is really designed to do over the 6 weeks that the students will be in it, it's really designed to provide the basic tools, the journalistic tools of critical thinking, in order to be able to decipher, in many ways, facts and misinformation that is perhaps out there in social media and in different media outlets.
So is this like the first time that like the university will be holding this type of program, or has like there been a similar one in the past?
No, this is in fact the very first time that the event is doing this type of programming. The nature of the program, again, because it is kind of civic education based, it's one of the first in the country as well.
Okay. And so can you tell me, like, since this is like the first time that the school will be having this type of program, can you like tell me a bit about why it's so important for people to be interested in it?
Well, I think it's it comes down to one simple fact. I think that over the last 20, 25 years, the amount of information, the amount of commodification of data and information has grown exponentially. You know, gone are the days when investigative journalism was the source upon which most people receive their news. Nowadays, there are many platforms and many sources, both credible and non-credible, individually based on YouTube and TikTok, politically driven with agendas. So, you know, given the swarm of information and, you know, that we're all living in right now, it is absolutely critical for citizens to be able to empower themselves with the right information to be able to make informed decisions. And we have seen this played out many times with kind of, you know, disinformation campaigns that have deliberately kind of thwarted, you know, democratic outcomes throughout the world. And there are many examples, Brexit, you know, what happened in the UK and Europe. Back in 2016 with the referendum was a really good example of that, where, you know, disinformation websites for the Leave vote were proliferating the airways, and many experts believe that really informed the outcome of that, you know, referendum with the result of the UK leaving. Soon after the votes, many of those sites vanished. So, you know, we live in an age where right now there is, again, that swarming of information is perhaps disabling people from being able to make the right decisions. Other examples include what happened recently in COVID-19, where there was a plethora of disinformation and perhaps misinformation with respect to the spread of the vaccine, to the virus and the utility of the vaccines and things like that, which again makes it very difficult to have reasonable, decision making, you know, happening. So the intent of the course is really to be able to provide people not with specific perspectives, but to really provide objective tools for individuals to make up their own mind, but also to have sourced information and to be able to validate actual information that they can then assess whether or not they will agree with a certain position or not, and try as best to decipher, deliberate false information, which can come in the form of again, misinformation or disinformation. And there's a very important distinction between the two.
What do you think, like, other than, like, there being, like, so many, like, platforms and, like, just sources that people could, like, look up on the internet, what do you think are, like, some other challenges, like, facing, like, media literacy and, like, just education today?
Well, I think it's just volume. I really do believe it's volume. I really do believe there's a lot of talking points out there. And I really do believe that the sophistication of what's happening over the last 25 years with, again, the pushing forward of false facts, it's being done in such a way that it sounds legit, right? So information about science-based things, whether it, you know, it's to do with health or it's to do with the economy or the environment, things that are put out there for the reader, for the average person, it's very difficult to make sense of what is fact and what is fiction, you know, to be quite honest. And normally there are some red flags that can be used, right? So usually false information red flags, and I'm sure we've all done this. You go to Facebook, you go to Twitter, you go to any platform, and normally posts that elicit emotional responses one should pause on. And those are the ones that really trigger a response. And those responses are usually triggered by individual anxieties and fears on a specific topic. So instead of being able to have kind of a reflective thought in terms of what's happening, you know, the false information, you know, narrative, which is sometimes easy to decipher, is that it is designed to trigger those emotional quick responses, that quick brain response, right? Where one is not really, you know, in a position to think, one is more in a position to respond and respond very strongly, either in favor of what you're reading, or just the opposite, but it takes away the objectivity of the process. And like I said, most times there is no filter, no objective lens that, you know, that's applied to that. So that's one approach. Mm-hmm. The other one is, like I said, the vast explosion of information platforms that are out there. I mean, right now we have over 2 billion websites. Not all of them are engaged in this activity, obviously, but the sheer number of platforms out there and pieces of information that are streaming to us on a 24/7 basis is just extraordinary. Now, like I said, it's sometimes easy to think about kind of an emotional triggered response that one may look at a Facebook site. Where it's becoming a lot more concerning is with the quick, you know, evolution of generative AI, of artificial intelligence. And we're seeing the early days of this with ChatGTP and the ability to be able to create narratives and write-ups that sound convincing, that do source partial facts. But the danger is in the quick and ease in order to be able to do this and in language, in discourse that sounds very convincing. This is a new era in AI and a new era in the information age that we're living in, which again brings some concerns from a democratic, you know, standpoint, from an individual citizen standpoint. You know, how do we ensure that, again, what we are receiving is objective, is non-bias, and does provide individuals with the ability to be informed and to use that information to make reasonable decisions, not decisions based on fear, not decisions based on misinformation or distrust, not decisions that further political agendas. So I think from all those perspectives, I think that, you know, our previous generations, I mean, this, everything I'm talking about is not new. I mean, the, you know, campaigns of misinformation and distrust and all of that has been around for decades. What we're really talking about here is the scale of this. And the scale and, you know, that's out there is enormous. And because of that, like I said, legitimate journalistic sources are being put beside non-reputable outlets that come across as legitimate, you know, like journalistic news sources. So again, for most people, it becomes very difficult. And it's not a matter of education and non-education. It's not a matter of people who are non-educated being fooled. Anyone could be fooled, and that's the concern. Uh-huh. So again, whether or not you hold a PhD or whether or not you're straight out of high school, I think there is the possibility of vulnerability the possibility of vulnerability in terms of being able to be exposed to information that can be biased. And again, particularly in the age of AI, where streams and volumes of information can come at us at lightning speed, I think that people need to have the ability to reflect. You know, people need to know what tools can they use to empower themselves, to inform themselves, in order to, again, be active participants of a democratic society, to make the places and spaces that we live better for all. And that right now is threatened because of, you know, the times that we're living.
Yeah, that was really great. It answered like a lot of my questions that I had like written up. So this program, since it's part of like extended education, like who is it like really open to, and like who like are able to like apply to the program?
It's open to everyone. That's what I meant earlier by it's a civic education program. You can be a journalist, you can be a scholar, you can be, so anyone can take the course. Unlike most programs offered at universities where there is a prerequisite, there is kind of a foundational knowledge base that you need to start with. The program that Cecil Rossner has put together is designed purposely to engage everybody. And so that's the key. It's this will be self-limiting if we're just trying to bring in young journalists, you know, to the front or people who are already in higher education. This is really designed for everyone. And there is no admission guidelines from that perspective.
Learn more at umextended.ca/media literacy.
Tobin Talks, Thursdays at 11:30 on 101.5 FM radio, which is UMFM radio, and you can listen to us anytime on all of your podcast streaming services, such as Spotify and Apple Podcasts.